Good morning, everyone. We're going ahead and call the Senate Committee on Judiciary to order. Thank you very much for being here. We have a pretty full day today with public hearings and possible work sessions. We have a request because of someone needing to be going to a different meeting to take SB 252 up first. So I'm going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 252.
Chair Prasansky, members of the committee, Senate Bill 252 comes to you from Senator Taylor. As you may know, a person's driving privileges may be revoked for a number of reasons, and the Department of Transportation may issue hardship driving permits to people who qualify for them. You can get a hardship permit for things like driving to and from work or to drug and alcohol treatment programs. SB 252 allows qualifying individuals whose driving privileges are suspended to apply for hardship permits in order to drive to and from gambling treatment programs.
All right, so I have two individuals. Senator Taylor, why don't you come up, and Barry Pack. Barry, why don't you come on up. Is there anyone else who would want to give testimony today on Senate Bill 252 besides these two? All right, so whoever wants to go first.
I'll go if that's okay. Thank you, Chair Prasansky, members of the committee. I'm Kathleen Taylor, State Senator, District 21, Southeast Portland, Joaquin Oak Grove. While the state benefits from funds generated by the Oregon Lottery, it is important to acknowledge that some Oregonians suffer from gambling addiction. Senate Bill 252 aims to reduce barriers for individuals seeking treatment to address gambling addiction and minimize any negative impacts of gambling and the Oregon Lottery. We worked with Oregon Lottery Director Barry Pack and Counsel Stacy Shaw on this concept. Currently in Oregon, someone can be issued a hardship permit to operate a motor vehicle in order to drive for specific purposes, for example, to travel to and from drug and alcohol addiction treatments or to seek employment or to get a job if there is no other reasonable transportation option available. Senate Bill 252 adds that a hardship permit may be issued for seeking treatment for gambling addiction. Barry Pack is also here to testify to share how the Oregon Lottery learned that this bill could be beneficial to individuals in our state and can obviously answer additional questions. I appreciate you giving me the time today to talk about Senate Bill 252, and I ask for your yes vote.
Good morning. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
How are you doing?
Doing well, thank you.
Why don't you proceed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record. I'm Barry Pack, Director of the Oregon Lottery. I want to thank Senator Taylor for bringing the bill forward. We brought this idea to her after I spent some time at Bridgeway Recovery Services, which is a residential treatment center for gambling addiction here in Salem. It is, in fact, the only residential treatment center for gambling addiction west of the Mississippi. So we have a fairly special and unique opportunity here. We toured the facility, and then we sat in the living room of its big group house and met with the clients who were in residence at the time and heard their individual personal stories about their struggles with gambling addiction and the impact on their lives. And while there was plenty of hope in the room, there was also an awful lot of tragedy. These people's lives have been destroyed through their own gambling addiction. Homelessness, joblessness, loss of their family, suicide attempts. And one gentleman in particular told the story of he was at a real bottom point in his life, and he was wanting to stay in recovery. And his mentor counseled him to just fill his day with group meetings, just keep going to treatment as often as you can. And because of where he was staying, he could not drive because he had his license suspended for drug and alcohol problems. On taking public transportation would have taken him, I think, 2 hours each way to get to a single meeting. And so to try and fill his day with meetings to further his recovery was made very, very difficult without the ability to drive. And we in Lottery did not realize that current law does not allow for hardship permits for gambling addiction. And so we thought this was a great way to support folks who have problems and make sure that they can easily or as easily as possible get to the treatment resources when they need it. So we brought the idea to Senator Taylor. I appreciate you bringing it forward, and I would urge your support, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you. Questions for the panel? So I just want to put on the record that it has been a normal course that individuals who are going through alcohol treatment programs can, in fact, and as Senator Taylor says, get a provision on their license to be able to travel to and forth, back and forth to their treatment programs. The question I guess I have, understanding that it sounds like we only have one residential treatment facility, do we know how many other non-residential treatment facilities we have in the state? I'm just trying to figure out, you know, on the record, exactly what we are going to have available for individuals for treatment where they would want to have or need that type of permit.
Well, do you want me to? Do you know the exact number?
I don't know the exact
number. So, Chair Brzezinski, I don't know the exact number. I don't know. I think that we would get a range. And the reason that is because, so I've worked with gambling issues with my predecessor, Representative Tomei. So before I was elected to office, I worked on gambling issues with her. And so there's Gambling Anonymous meetings, like AA meetings, that take places in a variety of facilities. And sometimes those places move, of course, due to, because they're often churches, et cetera, let them use the spaces for free. So I think it moves a little bit, but there are definitely Gambling Anonymous meetings going on through different metropolitan areas. But I don't know the exact number.
Yeah, at this point, I'm just trying to put some stuff on the record as to, you know, how this works and where people are going to need to be. And it, to me, it's very similar, and why we didn't think about this beforehand, as to just like alcohol treatment programs.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, if I may add, 1% of lottery revenues are statutorily dedicated to pay for gambling addiction treatment. And so we have partners with the Oregon Health Authority who offer treatment across the state. There are also a network of prevention providers who help try to keep people from becoming addicted in the first place.
Okay. Any questions, Senator Manning?
Yes, Senator, thank you so much. You know, this has seemed to me is be pretty clear. You know, if we have people enrolled in treatment programs, to have the ability to travel back and forth, you know, hardship or whatever the case may be, I don't think that this would create any problems. I don't see any creating any problems, but the intent is to make sure that they have the ability to seek treatment. And if we put people in terms of programs where they have to seek treatment, then by removing barriers to transportation is very important. So I will be supporting this.
All right, Senator Thatcher?
Well, what he said, but also I think we should look at letting people apply for, reapply for their driver's licenses if their underlying problems have been taken care of that caused the suspension to begin with. And anyway, I just think we do society a disservice by making it more difficult for them to function in society. So thank you.
All right. Any other comments or questions? Thank you all very much for coming forward. We're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 252. Do you have the paperwork? We do have the paperwork for Senate Bill 252, so I'll go ahead and open up the work session on Senate Bill 252.
Senator Mr. Thatcher. Chair, I move Senate Bill 252 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves Senate Bill 252 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Yes, Senator Dimbro.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I very much support this measure, Mr. Chair. And, you know, later in the session, I think I'm going to be bringing forward a bill that is looking more broadly at the issue of driver's license suspensions. This came out of our task force on reentry, which, you know, discovered that a lot of people are having their licenses suspended for reasons that have nothing to do with driving. You know, I think the underlying situation that's in this bill is focused more on people who've lost their license for driving offenses or driving while intoxicated, et cetera. But a very large percentage of drivers are losing their licenses for nothing that has to do with driving. So,
no, I mean, the number one cause, I would say, is failure to comply, failure to pay.
Correct.
On fines. And so, you know, it's kind of that catch-22. They can't drive or get to work to pay the fines. You know, how's that work? All right. Any other comments? Any objection to the motion that's to pass Senate Bill 252 to the floor with the due pass recommendation? So order. And do we have a volunteer, anyone that would like to do this?
Maybe Rep. Taylor.
Oh, Senator. I'm sorry. Senator Taylor, would you be the carrier on 252? I apologize. Slipping this morning. We'll close the work session on 252. Now, what we have left in, is Senate Bill 249, 250, and 375. Joel, I have you as the only individual for 375. I'm willing to do 375 first. I know you're going to be here for the other two, but I'm planning on as opening the public hearing on the other two together because it looks like we have the same people signed up for both of those. So, Joel, once you come on up, we're going to take 375, open up the public hearing, and if you can kind of give us the Cliff Note version, that'd be great.
Sure. For the record, I'm Joel Shapiro. I represent the Kids Are Not For Sale Coalition. Since this is our first hearing on this topic and we've got some new faces on the committee, I'll take just a moment to do a little bit of background on the issue of sex trafficking and my involvement. I'm an attorney in my private practice. I represent victims of sex trafficking on a policy level. Since 2013, I've worked with the Kids Are Not For Sale Coalition, which is organizations that are concerned about the issue of sex trafficking. And I just want to thank the chair for hearing these bills today and the members of the committee, the new faces and some and old faces who've been involved in this issue. So we really appreciate your participation. I think the bills today are good steps forward. We'll talk about the other two later. I don't have a whole lot to say about Senate Bill 375, but I have worked with a number of Rotarians, Dana Clark and Jeff Speer in particular, who have really put some thought and work into this issue of creating signage when people are traveling. Of course, we know that sex trafficking victims are often moved around without their consent and without a lot of access to the types of services and help that they may need to get out of this. Having access to a hotline number such as the Polaris hotline that can direct them to a local service provider is a very good resource. My understanding is that this bill would be funded in part by nonprofit donations so that it would not burden the state. I just think that it's worthwhile because it will do two things. One, it will help provide potential help for trafficking victims. Also, it will help raise awareness amongst the public. Those of us who work on this issue, it's easy to take for granted what we know about the issue, but the truth of the matter is for the general public out there, they don't know a whole lot about the issue of human trafficking. And so seeing some signage and understanding that maybe they need to learn more about the signs of human trafficking when somebody's in distress and might need help. There have been news stories recently about people in the transportation industry, like an Uber driver, like a flight attendant who've helped rescue victims because they see the signs. And so I think that this bill goes to that. And thank you very much for hearing the bill.
All right. Thank you. Any questions for Joel? Senator Knopf, did you want to give testimony on this particular bill? Because I was going to.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Come on up. Yeah, I heard that you wanted it on someone, but you weren't here, so I wasn't sure you wanted 375.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, State Senator Tim Knope, Senate District 27, representing Bend, Redmond, Tumalo, and Sun River. And thank you to Joel and Kids Are Not For Sale and Senator Hansel for bringing this concept forward. It is very important that we get information into the hands of trafficking victims, and the only place that they're typically alone is in a restroom. And this is a great opportunity for us to increase their ability to make the call to be rescued, because we get about a call a day from Oregon into the human trafficking hotline. And so this is just one more opportunity to basically spread the message and let people know that who to call and to help be rescued. So I think we should do everything we can from a legislative perspective to help these victims, because this is just such a heinous crime.
All right. Thank you. Questions for the senator? So, Senator Thatcher.
One call a day from Oregonians?
It's about 360 calls a year. So it's almost one a day to the human trafficking hotline. And that, you know, that's not just sex trafficking. That's labor trafficking. And that's, you know, that's other forms of trafficking. But still, I mean, that's substantial.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
All right, seems like we have additional individuals who would like to give testimony today. So, Senator Knope, I know that you're here wanting to give testimony to the other two. Are you?
Yes, I wanted to support Senator Taylor and let you guys know there's a bipartisan effort on those bills as well. So.
Okay, so let me get the last of the individuals. Nita, why don't you come on up? And while she's coming up, we do have someone here from State Parks. If there are questions regarding how this is going to play out, we can bring them up. But if you don't have questions on that, this is really just an authorization bill, and they'll do the rulemaking to ensure that it goes forward. Nita?
Hi, my name's Nita Bells. I'm within our backyard, and I actually was in on the first meeting of this bill. I hadn't noticed that it was being heard this morning, or I would have signed up. I apologize for the late sign up. The thing about this bill is that these signs are in rest areas across the United States. I think the thing that they did on this bill that I really liked is they put them inside the bathroom stalls. Oftentimes, that is the only place that a victim of human trafficking is alone. Sex trafficking victims have a phone because that is what their trafficker uses as a leash, if you will. And so these signs will go inside the restroom stalls, and I think that adds value to this. Inside a trafficker's what we call stable group of girls that he traffics, there's a hierarchy. And so that there's one person in charge, and she is given second in authority to the trafficker, and that person's called the bottom. And she is she will follow the girls. It's her job to keep those girls in line. She can mete out punishment. She collects the money. She makes the dates. She's in charge, second in authority to him. She will go into the bathroom with the girls, but she won't go inside the bathroom stalls. So I think that is a very good part of this bill, and it's different than anywhere across the nation, so we're the leaders in doing this. So I am in favor of it, and I think it will make a huge difference.
All right, thank you. Senator Hansel, you've walked in the room. I understand you may also like to give testimony on Senate Bill 375, so should I ask you to come forward?
Thank you, Chair. We were under the pressure and started at 8:30, so we turned the TV on and saw it was already started, so hustled down.
We're
here
going for the early warm, so yes, 8 o'clock these days. We had an announcement on the floor yesterday that said something about start time, but I know it was just for Judiciary Committee members.
I apologize.
No, that's quite all right. Go right ahead.
And some of my Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Hansel, State Senator for District 29, Northeast Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to speak regarding Senate Bill 375 to allow the placement of posters in rest stop bathrooms. Some of my testimony may have already been heard, but over the summer, this past summer, I was contacted by a constituent on a totally different subject matter. We were talking on the phone, and she asked me, Senator, when I'm traveling in other states on the East Coast, I stop at the rest stop along the highway, and they have posters combating sex trafficking. However, in the rest stops in Oregon, we don't. Why don't we have the posters here? And I replied, I have absolutely no idea, but I'll find out. So we started researching it, and we found out that not only do we not have any posters in sex trafficking posters in our rest area bathrooms, it's actually against the law to put them there. So we began to work with various state agencies to create the opportunity to have these posters in rest areas to combat sex and human trafficking. We held meetings with members of every agency that we could find that are involved in rest areas around the state. Those agencies include Travel Oregon, State Parks, Oregon Travel Experience, Oregon Department of Transportation, as well as the League of Oregon Cities. In addition to these agencies, Kevin Campbell, representing the Chiefs of Police and Sheriffs, Nita Bells, whom you've just heard from, a trafficking advocate, and Bob Russell from the Oregon Truckers Association, were also present at these meetings. We began discussing the issue and attempt to solve this very drastic and insidious activity. Sex trafficking and human trafficking is an epidemic that must be stopped. It is a terrible practice, a truly horror that is in every city nationwide. The human trafficking crisis has reached an epidemic level in much of the developed world, Oregon is not beyond its reach. Most sex trafficking occurs at rest stops along the interstates, and the worst rest stop in Oregon, from the facts that we were able to find, in fact, the whole West Coast, is right outside Wilsonville on I-5. In Oregon alone, the human trafficking hotline received 300 calls in 2016. This was in regard to 72 different human trafficking cases, as such amounted to approximately 646 different victims. Of the female victims, the FBI reports that on the average age at which they became victims was between 12 and 14 years of age. Senate Bill 375 allows for posters to put up in rest area bathrooms across the state, not only at popular interstate highways, but in every roadside rest area managed by the State Department. Both interstate and state highways is crucial in attempting to get this necessary information in front of as many people as we can. We list in the bill three specific provisions for the posters. Posters must include one toll-free hotline telephone number. They must include at least one text message number, and posters will be in English and translated in languages most commonly spoken in the state. It should be noted that state highway funds cannot be used to fund the placement and coordination of the notices. This bill allows for two human trafficking awareness funds to be created, one for the Department of Transportation, the other for the State Parks and Recreation Department. This fund is allowed to receive gifts, grants, or other contributions from both the public and private sources. It also has the ability for the legislature to appropriate funds directly. The bill states that both ODOT and the State Parks and Recreation Department will adopt rules for this program after each agency has received adequate funds to carry out the program. The bill provides for the opportunity for ODOT and Parks to work with nonprofit organizations to establish an agreement and allow for nonprofits to post and maintain the notices in the bathrooms. By allowing the partnership with nonprofits, we believe the implementation costs of the program will be kept at a minimum. The bill gives final approval to the state agency if they find that the information on the poster to be offensive or inappropriate, they have the right to refuse to display or distribute the material. The Travel Information Council, which is under the contract agreement with ODOT to manage 26 rest areas, will receive funds from ODOT to implement this program if funds are needed on January 2nd of each year. ODOT is here in the room today and has submitted written testimony, but it's my understanding they will only testify in person if the committee has questions for them. Thank you very much, Chair Prozanski, for the opportunity to present this bill my office has been crafting and developing for about 9 months. I would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
I don't know if he's the person to ask, but I heard in earlier testimony that this was going to be supported by private funds or at least, you know, donated. And now I'm wondering why there's a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is that necessary?
Chair Prozanski, Vice Chair Thatcher, this measure will allow for donations to go into it, but there will have to be rulemaking that goes along with it.
An authorization.
I see. Okay, thank you for clarifying.
All right. Senator Lethicon.
Just a quick follow-on, Bill. Thank you for bringing this forward, Senator. In the Travel Information Council, they're a contractor that has 20-some-odd rest areas that are highlighted in 375 under Section 5. Those aren't the only places that get the signage. Per your testimony, you said they'll, for example, Highway 97 doesn't show up on here, et cetera, Highway 140 and 58 and whatnot. Are those all inclusive?
Senator Prozanski, Senator Lithicum, my understanding is this. First of all, we found out that throughout the system, different agencies maintain or are in contract with the various rest stops. In the bill itself, there were two specific state highway rest stops at Mount Hood and then in Tillamook. It's my understanding that ODOT feels that should this bill pass, that gives them the authority to have them in every rest stop, whether it's on the interstate or not.
Thank you.
Senator Manning.
Yes, Senator, thank you so much for this, for bringing this bill forward. It's very important. I would just like to offer a little bit of expansion because it seems that the conversation is centered around female that's involved or victims of sex trafficking when there are also young men that are also involved in sex trafficking. So when the signage and stuff is placed out there, and I know that you've already, you know, gone through this, that it will also be included in the males' restrooms as well as the female restrooms. More importantly, that it's of the nature that it can't be removed or damaged, because I think that's one of the concerns that I have. It's an excellent bill. I definitely support this, though.
Senator Brzezinski, Senator Manning, thank you for that clarification. Absolutely, it's both male and female restrooms. That's a part of the bill. Sex trafficking is also a male problem, it will be in both genders. Absolutely.
All right. Bill, thank you very much for coming forward. Thank you for bringing the bill. So I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing. We do not have the schedule for work session today. I'm not sure exactly when it will be rescheduled. It will be rescheduled. It does have a subsequent to Ways and Means, so we'll try to get this through. I am going to put on the record there's a couple of things. First of all, what this bill is actually going to do is authorize for the placement of the signs. And the reason that we have to do this is because we have already limitations of people, let's say, without authorization, putting advertisements and extra type of material up at our rest areas. And that's, of course, a concern of people, you know, say, using it as a means to market stuff. So this is the need and the reason why we have it. So I want that on the record. And also, I think, Senator Manning, you brought up a very good point. You know, we shouldn't stand here and let's say, feel that by putting these signs in that it's going to have the ability to get information out. But I can tell you, whoever is the second in command, they're going to know those signs are there. And so I just want to make certain we're putting on the record that we're going to do everything we can to get as much information out to individuals. These individuals that are victims, male or female, are still going to have a lot of pressure placed on them from whoever is their controller. So any other comments before we close the public hearing? All right, with that, we'll close the public hearing. And colleagues, we now have two bills that are similar in nature, and this will be our first time to do this, but I will be opening a public hearing on both of the bills, Senate Bill 249 and 250. And the reason for that is to allow for efficiency, because virtually everyone has signed up on one bill, signed up for the second bill, and that way we will be able to get their testimony in coordination with each other. With that, we'll open up the public hearings on Senate Bill 249 and 250. Chana?
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, Senate Bill 249 and 250 both come to you from Senator Taylor and Rep. Huffman, who have been running a work group throughout the interim and in the prior years on commercial sex trafficking. Both of these measures deal with prostitution and prostitution convictions. Senate Bill 249 provides a mechanism for erasing a conviction of prostitution after the fact, called a motion to vacate. The measure outlines what needs to be shown after a conviction has happened in order to receive the motion to vacate. Senate Bill 250 provides an affirmative defense to a charge of prostitution. This would happen while the case was ongoing. And in order to claim the defense, the defendant must prove that they were a victim of sex trafficking at the time of the conduct that gave rise to the charge.
All right, thank you. So I'm going to have Senator Taylor and Senator Canope, you two, please come up. And John, did you want to go ahead and come on up and set out a whole panel? All right.
I'm going to kick it off here briefly. John Huffman, State Rep from House District 59. I'm really not going to testify this morning. I just wanted to let everybody know that, so I will spare the group some time testimony, because we have experts coming up to testify on behalf of both bills. They are products of our trafficking work group, and I just wanted to get that on the record. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Senator Taylor first, and Senator Pinole. Okay.
Okay, thank you, Chair Brzezinski. Members of the committee, again, Kathleen Taylor, State Senator, District 21. As the committee heard on Monday from Representative Huffman and I, that we co-chair the statewide Commercial Sexual Exploitation of Children Work Group, we call it CSEC. Victims of CSEC are often traumatized and are only willing to engage with the court system at varying points in their lives, depending on individual experiences. Senate Bill 249 and 250 together take this into account as they offer remedies at different points in the criminal process. To speak specifically about Senate Bill 249, this bill allows a person convicted of prostitution to petition the court to vacate their conviction under certain circumstances, which is an alternative to the expungement process for victims of sex trafficking who were charged with the crime of prostitution as a result of their victimization. The individual petitioning the court to vacate their conviction must allege they were a victim of sex trafficking at or around the time of the offense and provide a statement to the court as to why the trafficking was not addressed in the court. The person must prove to the court by clear and convincing evidence that they were the victim of sex trafficking. Evidence must include court proceedings, federal immigration proceedings, sworn statements from professionals, such as clergies, attorneys, medical professionals, and so on. If the person fails in their evidentiary showing, the court may still grant the motion if it determines it is in the interest of justice. That the court would look to any prior motions in the criminal history of the person beyond vacating the conviction. Representative Huffman and I worked closely with Aaron Knott from DOJ and the work group staff, Chana Newell, in drafting this bill. We want to thank Chana. She worked very hard on all these sex trafficking bills, more than people realize. They're very, very complicated, so we really appreciate her helping us. So in closing, 249 is in the interest of justice for victims whose conviction was a result of their exploitation. I appreciate your hearing, Senate Bill 249, and I ask for your support.
Thank you. Senator Knope.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator Tim Knope, Senate District 27, representing Bend, Redmond, Tumalo, and Sun River. And I'm here today in support of Senator Taylor's two bills, Senate Bill 249. And I just appreciate the opportunity to speak on the issue. The tenet of many faiths involves grace and mercy. And I think in this case, when we have people who are being exploited and who are being controlled, and even though they may be committing a crime in that process, I think we need to look at that on the other side and say, you know, is it beneficial to the state to continue to have those people have criminal records and that type of punishment going forward? And so I just think it's really important that we provide the opportunity for somebody to be able to have those things erased, expunged, and I think this is such a heinous crime, modern day slavery, and anything we can do to stamp it out as a legislature, and to support the victims of this crime and really turn them into advocates and activists to end it, I think we should do. And I think Senator Taylor has brought forward two really good concepts to do that. So I want to make sure that the committee knew that there was bipartisan support in the Senate as well as in the House.
Great. Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Pozanski. I failed to mention something regarding Senate Bill. Thank you, Senator Knope. I really appreciate your support. On Senate Bill 249, there was an error in the drafting I wanted to bring to everyone's attention, and we'll have an amendment drafted to correct it. So there's Section 1, Subsection 7. It does not have the full definition of sex trafficking. So just to bring that to everyone's attention, I just wanted to get that on the record. And then I did not realize we were going to hear the bills at the exact same time. So if it's okay with the chair, I'd like to talk about in more detail Senate Bill 250, because it involves affirmative defense, and want to make certain that the committee knows what Senate Bill, I talked about 249, I want to make sure everyone knows what Senate Bill 250 does. Is that okay if I go ahead?
This is your opportunity.
Okay, thank you, Chair Pozanski. Okay, so Senate Bill 250 creates an affirmative defense to prosecution of prostitution if the defendant was a victim of sex trafficking at the time of the offense that resulted in being charged with a crime. This is a narrowly tailored defense available only to those whose trafficking resulted in commercial sex acts. It does not provide a remedy for prior convictions. This bill is again aiming to take into account the traumatic nature of the experience of being sexually exploited, and that victims are often charged with prostitution throughout their time being controlled by their trafficker. It allows a more immediate option for victims to address the reason for their charge of prostitution to the court. A positive consequence that could take place as a result of disclosing to the court would, of course, be getting in touch with support services and resources. So I just want to thank everyone again, and thank Aaron Knott and the district attorneys for working with us on this, and again for Chana Newell for all of her hard work in drafting these bills. So I just want to clarify what 250 does.
All right. Thank you. Any questions, Senator Dimbrough?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And this may be a question for Chana, but if we pass these bills into law, which I hope we will, will the state of Oregon be an outlier here, or are there other states that are moving in this direction? Did that come up in the task force?
I'll have Chana answer, but so to have the exact answer. But this has been discussed many times, because there is a lot of, I'll just speak for myself, I think others would agree, that we need to do a lot of updating to the codes. I mean, there's just a lot of pieces missing, and we need to, so there's a lot of states working on these topic areas, and states are at different places, so it gets a little bit complicated. But on these two specific bills, I'll have Chana answer that.
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Denbrough, to answer your question, we did, especially Mr. Knott from DOJ, did a lot of research on what the other 50 states are doing. And from my recollection, I will get you the exact research on this, but from my recollection, we're about middle of the pack towards the end of the pack of the 50 states on what we provide as far as affirmative defense and post-conviction ability to erase this.
Just some follow-up, Senator. In terms of vacating versus expunging versus sealing and those kinds of terms, Senator Canope used the term erased, and that's also what's in our SMS, our summary. Can you explain? Go ahead.
Oh no! Go ahead.
I thought you saw where I was going. I'm just wondering, vacation of that leaves it on the record, but relieves the penalty. Is that true?
What we're going to do is we've got a certified smart panel coming up next, all law enforcement oriented or defense oriented.
Okay.
So if we're going to get into the legal stuff, I think it'd be a great question to pose to the next panel.
To the next panel, then. Thank
okay,
you.
Yes, because there is.
You owe me on okay. this one. I say.
All right. I think I know the answer, but we'll let the other people come up and talk about
Chair
that.
Chair Brzezinski, just quickly to Senator Denbrough's question. On all of the trafficking bills that come through our work group, we look at what's happening around the nation. And Chana said, if I understood it right, we're kind of in Oregon playing catch up here, but Aaron Knott, Justice Brewer, you know, they've gone to conferences. We've traveled up to Seattle 6 months ago to meet with a retired Supreme Court justice that Bridges that works on a lot of trafficking issues. So there's a lot of work done around this, and we do take ideas or model legislation from other states. Oftentimes, J.R. Ujifusa is going to be testifying this morning from the Multnomah County DA's office. He deals with this a lot and investigates and comes up with ideas for the group also. Thank you.
All right. Thank you all very much. We will now call up the lifelines of the first panel. This will be J.R., Aaron, and Gail. If you all three would please come forward. And then we have one other panel after this panel that will be also testifying.
In case we really need a lifeline.
So, JR, first, before we get started, on one of the forms I think you mischecked, you have on 249 a checking the against. I'm assuming you are for the bill?
Actually, Chair and members of the committee, I am against it as the wording is now. I think that we could come to a resolution, but as the wording is now, I see some definite, okay. genuine disagreement and concerns on behalf of the MCDA
okay.
and ODAA.
Let me do this. Since you're going to take that position, let's go ahead and get the other position there first, and then we'll have the counter so that way it will be in sync.
Sure.
Right.
In that case,
so Aaron, you're going to go first.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee. My name is Aaron Knott. I'm the legislative director for the Oregon Department of Justice here in support of both Senate Bill 249 and Senate Bill 250. As Representative Huffman and Senator Taylor mentioned, these bills came from a task force that's been in existence at least as long as I've been working for the Attorney General. My earliest memories of the meetings of this task force were in the living room of then Representative Carolyn Tomei, who I think really spearheaded this conversation out of the gate, and it's been carried forward by Senator Taylor and Representative Huffman. To start with Senate Bill 249, and I think this will answer some of the questions that have come up. So Senate Bill 249, as you heard from the bill sponsors, essentially allows a person to vacate a conviction for prostitution if they can demonstrate to a clear and convincing standard that they picked up that conviction as the result of having been the victim of trafficking. In considering this legislative proposal, we looked at all 50 states. 17 have a mechanism utilizing a motion to vacate. Now, something good to understand right out of the gate is the difference between an expungement mechanism and a motion to vacate. I would characterize an expungement mechanism as something close to a reward for good behavior. If you pick up a conviction and you go without a subsequent conviction for a period of time, you're entitled to an expungement, and essentially says you have demonstrated that you're low risk, you're crime free, so we'll take this off your record. It's essentially an incentive to help people have a motivation to behave as well as possible. And an expungement can't be used against you for employment purposes. You don't have to report it. It's not on your criminal history, so generally there aren't negative effects once it's been expunged. A motion to vacate is philosophically very different. It suggests that you should never have been convicted in the first place. I'll give you an example. So if you are convicted at the trial court level and then the case goes up on appeal and the appellate judge says, you know what, there was a mistake, you were convicted in error, the underlying motion is then vacated, which is, erased is actually the right word. It's like it didn't exist. So neither will have adverse consequences for you going forward, but they're not granted for the same reason. And I think that's especially important in this bill, because what this bill says is a person is not saying that they've been crime-free. They're not saying that they've had a perfect life once they escape their trafficker, if they escape their trafficker. They're just saying, you know, I was treated as a defendant, I was convicted as a defendant, but now I can come forward and say I was really a victim, and I can prove it. I can prove it to a clear and convincing standard. So as previous speakers have made clear, that while there are 17 different motion to vacate statutes in circulation, they are not all the same. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about the thought process of why we made the choices we did. So first of all, timing, how long you have to petition for the motion to vacate. States vary somewhat here. There are states that say you can come in at any reasonable time after the conviction. There's a couple of states, not many, that actually outline a specific period. Delaware says you can come in 2 years after the conviction. Hawaii says within 6 years. I'm not aware of any shorter than that. But the dominant approach goes one of two ways. Either you can come in at a reasonable time after you picked up the conviction, or several states, and this is the model we ultimately went with, and I'd say it was the majority model, it was 8 states, said you can get this conviction at any, you can get this vacated at any time, that you are able to come back and make a sufficient showing under a clear and convincing standard. I want to talk a little bit about why we made that choice, because we are informed partially by recent legislation that's come out of this body. Some of you will remember that I think it was two years ago, we extended the statute of limitations for first-degree sex crimes, and we extended it all. It was already at 30 years. In some circumstances, now it's unlimited. And I believe that the legislative findings around that bill suggested that we need to be trauma-informed when we're talking about victims. When you think about what a sex trafficking victim has been through, they are experiencing what would in many cases be first-degree sex crimes, rape, sodomy, unlawful sexual penetration, and they're being compelled to do so. And so the trauma is every bit as equivalent. And so it was our feeling that it really is not consistent with what we know of victimization, where it can take decades to even be able to talk about your trauma, to try to put some sort of a time limit on this remedy. We just felt that was profoundly unfair to the damage that may have been suffered by the victims. So that was that decision. As to the standard, clear and convincing. Clear and convincing is a high standard. It's not beyond a reasonable doubt, and we did that intentionally. The most obvious concern with a bill of this kind is that it could be misused, that you would have individuals who were not trafficked coming in and saying later, well, I was trafficked and prove me wrong, and then put the state in a situation where they couldn't prove that person wrong, and so you end up with a motion to vacate that wasn't deserved. Clear and convincing is the same standard we use to terminate an individual's parental rights or to place them in the state hospital on a civil commitment against their will. It's not as high as beyond a reasonable doubt, as I said, but it does require a court to be convinced that the evidence is sufficient to demonstrate that trafficking happened. We think that this will have the effect of making it very hard to game this provision. I don't know how else to put it. So that, too, was a deliberate choice. Finally, there's a question about who should be the decider. This is one area where states differ. Of the 17, 15 say the judge is the appropriate mechanism for deciding whether or not a motion for vacation is deserved. For two, it requires prosecutorial certification. We decided after much discussion to leave this in the hands of the judge. That is more consistent with the way our Oregon criminal code is handled, which tends to leave these decisions to the judge. Outside of the U visa protocol, which is something that is imposed by the federal government, I think the idea of a prosecutorial certification is, at least in the literature that I've reviewed, not recognized as a best practice, and it tends, or at least has the potential, to lead to serious regional differentiation, depending on how each individual district attorney might feel about this crime. I wanted to speak finally to the amendment that is necessary, and I spoke to legislative counsel about this. So this essentially says, SB 249, if you are the victim of trafficking.
Why don't you give us a location so it's on the record?
Sure. So this is Section 1, Sub 7, which is page 2, lines 10 through 12. As used in this section, sex trafficking means the recruitment, enticement, harboring, transportation, provision, or obtaining of another person for the purposes of a commercial sex act. And my apologies for not coming to this earlier, but what is missing from this is any element of coercion, which is what makes us nervous. If somebody is transported for the purposes of a commercial sex act, that may just mean they hopped into a car with a John or had somebody drive them who knew that they were going to engage in sexual conduct. So I've spoken to legislative counsel. I think the fix here is fairly easy, so there will be an amendment forthcoming. Moving to SB 250, I'll leave most of the technical discussion on this one to Mr. Ujafusa because he had more to do with the drafting of this bill, but the Department of Justice completely agrees with what this bill is trying to do, where a motion to vacate addresses you've been trafficked, you've gotten out of the life, and now you're trying to erase the convictions that you may have picked up as a result of your abuse, so you can really just get on with your recovery. The defense mechanism is for you when you find yourself charged. And an affirmative defense puts the burden, again, the burden is on the person to demonstrate that the trafficking is there. We didn't want to back the state into the corner of having to disprove something impossible. So we do support both of these bills. And I'll close by saying I never miss an opportunity to point out that DDA J.R. Ujafusa trained me when I came to the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. So insofar as my testimony was unclear, I would chalk that up to a failure of training and feel free to blame Mr. Ujafusa. No, I'm just kidding.
This is where the mentee comes back. And Gail, did you want to go next?
Yes, thank you. Chair Przanski, members of the committee, Gail Meyer on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. We do want to thank Senator Taylor and Representative Huffman for spearheading this effort. We are in support of both of these bills. And, you know, often I look at the bills and I think to myself, how is some new criminal defense lawyer recently graduated from law school? What are they going to do with these? There's a secondary gain, particularly with 250, with putting that affirmative defense right there in the ORS as it relates to the crime. It's going to enhance the quality of the exchange and the discussion between the criminal defense lawyer and the client. You know, a client coming into the door charged with prostitution, it can be a very truncated examination of facts based on the police reports. Yes, I was on 82nd. Yes, I was soliciting. Yes, there was a decoy. Yes, I agreed. Yes, I was intending to, you know, engage in the act of prostitution. That right there would have them guilty. But by putting the affirmative defense right in the statute, some new graduate from law school is going to read that ORS and go, oh, but there's an affirmative defense right here. I need to probe further and find out what's the factual circumstances of why this person was on 82nd. And you might think that's obvious, but it really isn't always that obvious. Some of these, the clients, they don't want to talk about it. They just want to talk about the facts, the case, and that's it. And they don't want to discuss who that gentleman is who brought them into your office and is waiting for them in the hallway. They don't want to discuss it. So both of these bills will put on the radar of the criminal defense lawyers. We have an obligation, too, to ferret out these facts and find out which of our clients are being trafficked and which ones are not. And I think these will aid and assist that quite a bit. With respect to 249, as we bring our second look at these bills the day of the hearing, there's something in there that's also missing is, like, what to do about the LEDs entry and the NCIC entries of these convictions once the motion to vacate is granted. There's nothing in the expungement bill that would say that these would necessarily be sealed and taken away. So I think we need to talk about that too. What about the former entry on the printout of someone's criminal history? If the court enters the motion to vacate, perhaps we need to codify that would necessarily come off the printout later of their convictions. So,
all right, we'll come back to that.
Okay.
J.R.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is J.R. Ujifusa. I'm a senior deputy district attorney for Multnomah County, and I supervise the human trafficking team there in Multnomah County. I'm also here representing ODAA. For the last 8 years, I have been the primary prosecutor for human trafficking crimes in Multnomah County, and I'm also a special assistant U.S. attorney for the United States Attorney's Office specializing sex trafficking crimes. The reason that I check the box oppose is because I think that the idea is a great idea. But I'd like for you to follow with me into the weeds a little bit to talk about how this application actually works in a courtroom with real life victims, with real life traffickers, in a system that I've worked in the last 8 years full time. And that's what my concern is. I think the idea of protecting victims, vacating their convictions, allowing affirmative defenses is a great idea. But I think it is really important that we get it right the first time. So that's why we have some genuine disagreements about this. I'd like to start with 249, Senate Bill 249, and talk about what I see are some of the unintended consequences of this bill. My job is to look into the eyes of victims and sometimes traffickers on the ground and talk to law enforcement who I work with on a daily basis, who do these cases, who investigate these cases, who work with these victims. One of my concerns is that this bill actually will perpetuate trafficking, and I'll explain the reason why. Traffickers are a very manipulative group of individuals who are usually very savvy in both the ways to how to manipulate people and the law. One of the ways that I see them manipulate victims is to use the criminal justice system against them. And what I mean by that is to put the burden on victims to go through the criminal justice system alone and to protect them as traffickers. In this bill 249, there's some concerns for me, not about the extent of the time limit. I think the time limit should be extended so that when a victim is ready to talk about the abuse and victimization they have received, that they are able to get their convictions vacated. My concern is on the front end. As this bill is written right now, the day after a conviction, a victim may move the court to vacate their conviction a day after their conviction, meaning that if they went through a jury trial for 2 days and they did not bring up under an affirmative defense under 250 that they were trafficked, the next day they could come forth with a motion and say, I was trafficked. Here's a signed affidavit by my clergy member who I've spoken with. And at that point, that manipulation can start to be the basis of a trafficker who the victim, as Mr. Knott said, we are trying to get victims out of the life of prostitution, out of the life of control and manipulation by traffickers. And I see that this ability to do this right after a conviction is a way a trafficker can continue to control and manipulate a victim by telling them, that's all right, go to trial, and if you get convicted, there's a way out still, but you're still going to be working for me. I've seen this time and time again with victims being manipulated in jail, in other areas by their trafficker behind the scenes. In addition to that, along the same lines, this bill does not limit the amount of times a victim may vacate their convictions. And so a trafficker who is manipulating their victims may say, you can get arrested and convicted 20 times, every time we'll just get it vacated. The person you're seeking help from may be able to vacate this, but it may be a way in which a trafficker may continue to manipulate a victim. I agree that the wording is missing and should be included to be consistent with Senate Bill 250, that it includes sort of the definition that's in ORS 163-266, which is using force, fraud, intimidation, or coercion as part of the means in which they are trafficked. In addition to that, I have spoken with many survivors, treatment providers, victim advocates who agree with me that this may have the opposite effect the way it is written. I think we can come to a consensus that makes this bill airtight, that there are no loopholes or unintended consequences, to make sure that those individuals who are trafficked can vacate their convictions, that they may have a way to do that that is appropriate, at the same time that it does not benefit or continue traffickers, trafficking victims, adult victims and minor victims, both male and female. I've spoken to many law enforcement officers, many of which I work with are the some national experts on sex trafficking and victimization of traffickers, and they have some concerns as well that there are many loopholes in this Senate Bill 249 that are concerning to us as ways in which a trafficker may manipulate the system and manipulate their victim to where our intent to get victims out of the life will actually have the opposite intent. Thank you for listening. I'm happy to answer any questions about sort of the on the ground, how this bill may look in trial and investigations.
All right. Before we take questions, the chair is just going to put on the record. As we know, as I stated previously, we're doing work, no work sessions on these today. I'm not going to move 250 till we move 249. I want them to go in tangent parallel when they go to the floor. So, and we know that we're going to have some additional work done on 249. And that this is going to allow the work group to continue to do what they need to do to sit down and work through all this. So with that understanding, knowing there's some issues, and JR, I understand that you were part of the work group. I understand some of the stuff may have been discussed there. So we'll go through this process, but at some point, we who get paid the big bucks are going to have to make a final decision. So if you want more information, first of all, we're going to do questions now. But if you want to get more into the weeds and stuff, you may want to actually have individual proponents or opponents come to your office to give you more detail, because it may be a part where if we don't get the consensus, that we're going to have to make some decisions as to how policy-wise we're going to go. Okay, with that, any questions for anyone on the panel? This is your lifeline of certified smart people.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dimbrough.
Thanks. Yeah, I do have a question for JR.
Yes.
You know, I appreciate the concerns that you raised, you know, in the abstract and as hypotheticals, but I'm wondering, you know, we've heard that language like this exists in other states, and I'm wondering if you're seeing if we're seeing this problem of repeated vacations or people coming, you know, very quickly after the trial and pursuing a vacation. Is there evidence out there? I mean, if this is a practice that's been in place for a while, what are we seeing that we can use to inform any potential changes to this drafting?
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Dimbrough. I think most of these, if I'm not mistaken, and I can go back and do some research, most of these different states that have had these bills, they're pretty new bills as far as I'm concerned and what I've looked at. And some of what I'm concerned about are things that I run a national listserv for prosecutors and law enforcement under sex trafficking. And there are some definite concerns about manipulation by traffickers using victims to continue to manipulate them. I can't give any specific examples, but what I will say is that when you look at these bills, some of them have the requirements I'm concerned about, whether it's how many times one may vacate, whether it's a time limit before someone may vacate. They are all over the map as to that extent, as well as Aaron mentioned earlier. I think my personal opinion, being a prosecutor, is law enforcement and prosecutors may have the best sort of view as to whether they should certify that. And that's where this conversation started. But I will say that comparing, it may be hard to compare apples to oranges as far as what this bill looks like as opposed to other states, and I'm happy to do that work to help answer this question better for you.
Any other questions for anyone on the panel at this point? Thank you all very much for coming forward. We have one other panel, at least the number of people that wanted to give testimony. Nina, if you'll come back up, Joel, and then Roger Martin, you also wanted to give testimony. Well, she. Yeah, I'm just not stopping to do this.
Nita?
Yes. Nita? Yeah. That's the those are the last three I had on the list, making up the what would now be our third panel. All right. Who's going to be brave and go first?
Go.
Go ahead, Joel.
Okay. For the record, Joel Shapiro. And again, I want to thank the chair for scheduling these bills and the members for hearing them. I particularly want to thank Senator Taylor and Representative Huffman for their leadership of the work group in bringing these bills forward. I want to say that although there is some disagreement in perhaps some of the details, I think there is widespread agreement that more needs to be done to help victims of trafficking move forward. And so I'm here to testify from a victim's advocate perspective, as somebody who has represented victims personally in the civil legal setting, not the criminal. But I've seen the struggles that trafficking victims go through to move forward with their lives. And I think these two bills are a really good bookend, because they're talking about an affirmative defense on the front end of being charged with a crime related to commercial sex, and then vacating that conviction later. And so the committee has heard some very important testimony. I understand you're not going to make decisions today, but I want to not waste a lot of time, but I want to focus specifically on the dispute that's been raised about the standard for vacating a conviction. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for the work that Mr. Ujifusa has done locally, nationally. He is truly a leader on this issue. But I disagree with his perspective on this, because from a victim's standpoint, when the victim is ready to come forward and ask the court system to vacate their conviction, I think that step needs to be honored and shouldn't be second-guessed as to whether this person is being manipulated, whether they have left the life or they are still in it. I am not aware of examples where somebody is being manipulated by a pimp and has come forward and said, I'm going to vacate a prior conviction, but I'm still involved in trafficking. I'm still in the life. I think to reach that step where you're coming forward to the court system and asking them to vacate a prior conviction, it's a pretty good indicator that you've made a decision that you want to move forward and go in a different direction in your life. The truth of the matter is, as the previous panel alluded to, this is pretty much anecdotal. There's not a lot of data out there about this particular issue. I'm happy to see if I can gather more information to present to the committee, but what I can tell you is victims to make that step to come forward, I'm not aware of anyone doing that while they're still being manipulated. And I think that's an important respect that the process can give to somebody who has gone through the trauma bonding with their pimp, and they've been under that manipulation, for them to realize that they need to go in a different direction and come to the court and ask for the conviction to be vacated. I think that's a pretty good indication they're ready to move forward. And with that, I'll turn it over to the other witnesses.
All right, thank you. Who'd like to go next?
Nina, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I can go next. Thank you, Senator Prusansky, for hearing these important bills. And I, too, would like to thank Senator Taylor and Representative Huffman for their great work in really spearheading this. I do work across the nation, and having them spearheaded is such a value to our state. I am in favor of both bills. I do recognize that traffickers will manipulate in whatever way that they can to keep a victim from harming them, because it's always about themselves. I would like to point out that the traffickers force these victims to commit this crime, and by physical harm or even death, they threaten not just the victim, they threaten the families of the victim. I know of one survivor who their trafficker threatened to burn down their mother's house, and he had committed arson on other family members, and so she knew he would. That person is in prison without parole, possibility of parole in the state of Oregon today, but those things happen. A week ago today, I was in Houston, Texas. I work surrounding the Super Bowl every year in anti-human trafficking efforts. Houston Police Department invited me to help when victims were arrested and help them persuade them to come to the place of understanding that they were a victim of trafficking, not a victim, not a prostitute. And I worked with 8 survivors that day, and each survivor had a story. They all wanted legit jobs. They all wanted services, whether or not they were in a place to accept those services because of the control that they were so afraid of by the trafficker who was waiting. They were trying to get out so they could get back and make their quota and make their money. They were crying, they were asking for help, and some of them didn't even know that there was help available to them until a week ago today, last Wednesday, and they realized as we were standing there in a parking lot with Houston Police Department that they were going to have help and receive services. Victims are not benefiting monetarily from the crimes because the traffickers take 100% of their earnings and the money that they receive from the Commercial Sex Act. Convictions like this help prevent survivors from getting their driver's license or other ID. Not that there's a law that they can't get their driver's license, but there's a fear of warrants waiting for them if they expose themselves. They may be afraid to contact authorities because they've had such a fear in them for authorities. Traffickers have told them they can't get help. The benefits for Senate Bill 250 is that the bill has valid ramifications because it can't be a crime of prostitution if one was forced to commit it. Forced prostitution equates to the crime of human trafficking being perpetrated on the victim. The word prostitute is a word that grates on my heart because they are not prostitutes. That's something that's got to change in our society. When I was growing up, I grew up in a grocery store in Cobourg, Oregon, my dad had. And I remember growing up, there were a couple of women in our town who would come in repeatedly with black eyes and bruises from their husbands because they had inflicted domestic violence on them. And I remember my dad's words, "They must have liked it or they wouldn't go back." That was a mentality in the 70s that thankfully we no longer live under. But we are still saying she's choosing to be a prostitute. We've got to change that mentality just like we changed the mentality on domestic violence. Finally, I'd like to say that I believe, and the reason that I'm in this work, I've done domestic violence work, I've done some other things, but 10 years ago I entered into this work because I believed when I saw human trafficking that it is the worst atrocity on planet Earth. Victims and survivors, I have probably more than 100 friends that are survivors of human trafficking, and they deserve all the help we can give them. They live with that terror, that PTSD, those triggers and those memories every day, every minute of their life. Vacating convictions for crimes they were forced to commit is the least we can do for them. These convictions took place while they themselves were victims of atrocities untold proportions. I would ask for mercy for these precious souls who deserve a chance to be free of convictions which should never have happened and are now preventing them from living a life as an ordinary citizen. I have a friend who's a survivor who was turned down by nearly 100 apartment complexes. She's just trying to find a place to live. She's been out of the life for 18 years, but that
previous conviction keeps her from having it. Many of my friends are making amazing contributions to society, and having these convictions removed would increase their ability to be a contributing member of society. I would ask that those crimes not hold them in bondage for something they never had a choice in doing. Thank you.
Thank you. Roger?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin. I represent the Oregon Catholic Conference. We also support the great work that Senator Taylor and Representative Huffman have done. We were part of that task force. I simply want to underline the severity of this problem, because most people I talk to are amazed when they hear the severity of it. The Portland Police Department and church groups in Portland have been running a decoy website, because the internet is the brothel of the 21st century. And in the last 3 years, they have intercepted 150,000 phone calls of people seeking teenage sex. They're told that their names are now, or their phone numbers are now recorded at the Portland Police Department. They're offered the chance to amend their ways. Most of the time, the people hang up. That, to me, is unbelievable. I asked the person that runs the major network where these calls were coming from. He said, all over the metropolitan area of Portland. I said, what's the most frequent site? He said, Lake Oswego. I live in Lake Oswego. I tell that to people. They can't believe it, but it's going on around us. The individual who has set up one of these decoy networks has taken this effort to other major cities in the United States. Just an illustration, he went to Boston, where they have no, they do now, but didn't have at the time. And they asked, could we interview you on the National Public Radio, the biggest station of NPR is in Boston. He said, under one condition, I don't ordinarily do these things, but under one condition, I show you the severity of the problem. They said, well, that's fine. He came, he set his telephone down next to it. He'd set that number up for calls seeking sex. Phone rang every half minute for 60 minutes. We need to pass these bills and the other bills you're going to be hearing. This is a profound problem that has to be addressed. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you. Questions? Senator Manning, looks like you're ready to go.
Yes. One quick comment about the testimony from the previous panel. I think it is good that we take back, make sure that we get this thing right. You know, make sure that there is no going back over and saying that, okay, well, we got to come back to do another bill because we didn't have the right elements in there. So to sit down with partners and stuff and make sure we get the language right the first time is very important. As a former police officer, I do know that I've seen instances where we had sexual exploitation that occurred, and the victim, once they were separated temporarily, then they did wind up going back to the abuser, or, you know, the person that was exploiting them. And it happened to occur time and time again, and eventually it, unfortunately, sometimes it winds up in the death of the victim because the violence continues to escalate. So I am happy to hear that you're willing to go back to the table and make sure we get this thing right. I do support both of these bills, but I think that we do need to look at how we're going to strengthen this so those unintended consequences that people are manipulated by the aggressor or the assailant. You know, sometimes people wind up in Stockholm syndrome. We've always heard that stuff, where they figure that the perpetrator is their best source and they will continue to do this. So I understand what the DA's position is, but I also understand why this is so important that we get this done right the first time.
All right. Any other comments? So, Senator Manning, we will do our very, very, very best to get it right the first time, but don't be surprised if you see us coming back and doing more, because there's things that are just happened. This, as you will find in your journeys here, we pass legislation. It's a living document. It's one that doesn't just get put on the shelf and you never see it again. And with individuals, advocates such as Joel in this particular area, and of course the representative and senator, I assure you, you'll continue to see more and more work as we go through this process. And we've been doing this, Joel, for six.
Yeah, since 2013 session is when we really took a big jump forward on this. But even before then, there were some smaller efforts.
Yeah. So
it's ongoing, and but it's one of those things. And then having, you know, and the situation with Senator Hansel having a constituent being somewhere else in the country, seeing something else that's being done a different way, or something that's being approached or addressed that we're maybe not doing, it just gives us that opportunity. So we're always looking for ways of improving whatever we pass. Other comments?
I just have one other comment, Mr. Chair. I'm really excited and, you know, I'm amazed to see that you have on a tie. not the traditional bow tie. Yeah. So I see, hey, you're all right, you're quality.
All right. Thank you all very much for coming forward. Is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on Senate Bill 249 or 250? All right, not seeing it, we're going to go ahead and close the public hearings on those two bills. And at this point, we have concluded with what we had. I don't think we had any introduction of committee measures. And so tomorrow is going to be Thursday. It is an 8 o'clock start time again. And with that, we're adjourned. Thank you very much. We're adjourned. Thank you very much.